Oh, Blondie. Well, great way to start off the show. Blondie, she's going to be at Mass Mocha tomorrow, massmocha.org. They're going to be out on the field, Joe's Field. Blondie's still at it. Good for her. And we're going to be listening to her music throughout the morning. And then following the panel, we'll talk to her.
Oh,
we'll talk to Blondie.
All of us will. This is exciting.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, we're going to...
A surprise!
Excitement of, talking to Debbie Harry, of course, of Blondie fame. So we'll be hearing those hits throughout the morning. That's very exciting. As is the panel that we have assembled this morning. Good morning, everyone. Hello. How are you? Is everything okay?
No.
Good morning.
Okay, no. What's wrong with you?
Trump.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's good. I was just asking the two participants who came in from the Media Project taping, I said, how did it go? And they said, depressing. Just kind of depressing.
Here we have the specter of reporters in great danger having to walk around with bodyguards now because of what's happening. And believe me, a bodyguard isn't going to stop some lunatic from taking a shot. It's terrible.
There was a rally in Florida, right?
Tampa
on Monday night, mm-hmm. And the press is penned in the center of these arenas, and they're surrounded by Trump supporters. And then, of course, the president points them out, and people are screaming at them and yelling at them and throwing things at them,
saying they suck,
giving them the finger and everything else. And so they feel obviously very uncomfortable. And this was something, this is not new. This is something that was going on during the campaign that Katie Turr wrote about beautifully in her book. But it is deeply concerning. And there is absolutely nothing that is being done at these rallies or at the presidential level to stop the supporters from harassing the press. I mean, besides just being the press, but just other human beings. But we'll...
The lack of morality by this administration is exemplified in so many different ways. But as it regards to the press, you know, no president likes the press. They all get mad at the press. But the extent to which he has gone to try to turn it around and create
scapegoat.
Scapegoat and whip up anger against the press is unprecedented and very dangerous.
I can imagine Chris Churchill sitting here has a pretty thick skin and is used to being, roughed up by people he asks questions of, but this is a new level.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I do have a thick skin.
And you're out in the field. I mean, the publishers and editors in this room, we can sit in our offices here and just take the phone calls.
Yeah. And the level of anger coming from all sides is just extraordinary. Yeah. I mean, I'm hearing from people on the Uber left saying, you should be meaner. You shouldn't have John Faso on your air ever. That kind of stuff. And it is where you see the press going down. And if the press goes down in this country, then it will be like every other dictatorship where the first ones to go are the press.
Well, it's part of this hyper-partisanship of our era. I mean, every time anyone, and this is true of both sides, really, but anytime anyone hears anything they don't agree with or that doesn't confirm their biases, the immediate response is to get angry or to say some version of fake news. And a lot of people are saying that. I mean, that's not, obviously that's a Trump phrase, but you hear it more and more from just ordinary politicians, and you hear attacks on the media from people like our governor.
So we got started
that's
on
right.
We got started.
Haven't even introduced
anybody. Well, I haven't even introduced anybody. Let me just introduce everybody.
Can we talk about that on Blondie? The Media Project?
I'm sure.
That's right. And Blondie isn't on the panel. So Ira Fussfeld is here, Daily Freeman publisher emeritus and longtime journalist. Of course, Chris Churchill is back with us. He is a columnist for the Times Union. Judy Patrick is with us, a longtime editor for the Daily Gazette, as well as her current position as Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association. Vice President.
I didn't realize I was sitting next to the Vice President.
One bullet away from full editorial control of development of the New York Press Association. And Times and WMC's Alan Chartok, of course.
Of course.
All right. So one of the things I thought was interesting yesterday, there was a reporter who, of course, they were talking a lot about the Jim Acosta of CNN and the video that was going around of him just being, you know, pummeled almost literally by these by the supporters that at this rally. The new White House communications chief Bill Shine, a former president of Fox News, signaled a tougher approach to press relations when he barred a CNN reporter from a public event last week in the Rose Garden. The reason? She asked questions of Mr. Trump in what the White House deemed an inappropriate manner for an event in the Oval Office. This reporter was on CNN yesterday, and while they were talking about all this, and she said, you know what, that's different. She said, I understand. I've been part of that before. You go in and you're shouting out questions and you say something and they say, all right, here's your timeout for a couple of minutes. We're just going to slap you on the wrist. She said, that's normal. That goes on all the time. But what's happening at these rallies is very abnormal.
And not only that, Joe, but it's contagious. Chris just said something about the governor. You want to remind us what that was all about?
Well, he's been going after Zach Fink of Spectrum News. Every time Zach asks a tough question, which to Zach's credit, he does fairly often, the governor changes the subject and brings up the PSC lawsuit against the parent company, Spectrum, that Zach works for. And, you know, it's a terrible tactic. On one hand, he's changing the subject. On the other hand, it's an attack. He keeps saying, I'm suing your company, and you're asking me this tough question, essentially, is what he's saying, because
I am suing your company. A fair question. So why don't you return all the money you're getting, you know, from companies that have, you know, to worry a little bit about their reputations at this stage?
Yeah, and there are people out there. I hesitate to repeat this. But what the heck? There are people out there who feel, and this maybe says something about the way people feel about Governor Cuomo, but there are people who feel that this entire thing with Spectrum is about Spectrum giving too much favorable coverage to Cynthia Nixon or putting her on the air too much. I kind of doubt that that's true, but, you know, that's the kind of atmosphere the governor has created where there are a lot of people believe that he is capable of what would that be called? It's not...
It's bullying, right?
Bullying, yeah.
I mean,
it's very Trumpian. I mean, that's something that people would suspect Trump might do.
So Sean Hannity, at the start of his program, said, the people of this country are screaming at you, Mr. Acosta, for a reason. They don't like your unfair, abusively biased treatment of the President of the United States. He then played a montage titled CNN's Jim Acosta Lowlights, and then followed with footage of Mr. Acosta pressing Ms. Sanders at briefings and criticizing the administration's attitude toward the news media. It just seems to me that if that's the line, not from the administration but from Mr. Hannity, which might as well be from the administration, I guess, well, we could say the same thing about, well, the reason that people are yelling and screaming about the That's the reason that people are yelling and screaming about the president, too, right?
Well, I didn't see that clip, but I presume that he's calling the lowlights, the sharp questioning that Acosta has been doing, which is perfectly reasonable and right fitting his job description. And by the way, it's fun to do this and play whataboutism. What happens if Barack Obama was still the president and he was saying this about Fox News, as he sometimes did? The right would go nuts, but the right now, of course, is cheering the president and Hannity on because it's the shoe is on the other foot, proverbially.
There were only 3 formal news briefings in July, right, compared with nearly once a day in the early part of the tenure of Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And to my knowledge, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, I believe there has only been one. I don't think there have been any what we would consider to be formal news conferences by this president of the United States, and there was only one press conference where he was calling on reporters that has taken place in the nearly 2 years.
Yeah, I thought there was one about 2 months ago, and people tell me I'm wrong, so I may be mixing it up with something else, but they certainly has not had a lot. And you know what's funny? He can handle them. You know, he'll handle them in his own abusive,
right,
bullying way.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't be bad in that forum.
But he's just not doing it. And
And Sarah Sanders isn't holding press briefings like she should as well.
Right.
You know, the only thing that makes me sleep well at night is the notion that most of the people are not watching Hannity. They're watching, you know, America's Bachelor or American Ninja Warrior.
Okay, that doesn't help me sleep at all. That's a degradation of our human society, Judy. I understand your point.
Yes. I mean, he's preaching to the – Hannity's preaching to the choir.
Yes, except, Judy, that it is that choir which got this guy elected president of the United States. Strategic because of the Electoral College and everything else. But the more inflamed he keeps them, and he sure knows it, the more likely he is to win again. And that's his whole standard of operation.
I just want to say I don't think for a second that CNN is above reproach or criticism. I think in a lot of ways it is a pretty terrible network. I mean, I think that you could say that the Trump phenomenon is they're largely to blame for it. By, you know, they put every one of his rallies up on TV and made it almost impossible for the other Republican candidates to compete. I mean, with the amount of free airtime they gave him. And I don't think their coverage now is necessarily all that great or all that balanced. That said, you know, there's a line that you shouldn't cross when you're dealing with fellow human beings, you know. And I think sometimes those supporters at those rallies, while they might have some legitimate reasons to be angry at the network, obviously they cross that line.
The line, the beginning line of the article in the New York Times on this issue that says, "A baby wearing a CNN sucks pin," pretty much sums it up.
Yeah.
It does.
Well, you
it?
Know, I think there are reasons to be mad at any news organization, for example, for assumptions. For example, there is an assumption going around now, and I hear it on CNN all the time, that the president wants to testify, but that his advisors don't want him to testify. In other words, the lawyers. And that is a given. I mean, we keep hearing, you know, the host saying it, the president wants to testify.
Well, that's the official line from the administration,
yeah,
right?
That's the official
line from Giuliani.
I get that. Nevertheless, I don't believe it for a second. I believe that the president says to his lawyers, "I'll say I want to testify, and you say I don't want you to testify. And that way, I'll be the good guy, and you'll be the bad guy." What bothers me, following on Chris's point, and I like CNN a lot, but what bothers me is the assumption that the president is telling the truth, that he wants to testify, when I doubt that very much.
Well, if he wants to testify, he should testify. The lawyers are working for him, not the other
way around. Exactly, and it's because the lawyers are working for him that he's telling them, the big lie will be that I want to testify and you won't let me, as if that would has ever mattered before in Donald Trump's
life. But doesn't that make him look weak?
No.
Why? Why is he's the big, strong president. He's his own man, and he's getting kowtowed by the lawyers?
Ira, this guy is in a bad spot right now. He's in a bad corner, and this is just one more nuance that he thinks will protect him. Mm.
The other thing, too, I mean, to Alan's direct point about the issue of testifying as to the press sort of buying that argument, it seems to me, and one of the things that I think goes to what Chris was saying of there are networks, and I think CNN is one of them, and I'm not saying it's not, I mean, we do it on this show too. There is a hard time believing anything the president says.
Over 4,000 lies.
I mean,
or tweets. Yeah.
Or tweets. So yeah. So anything that comes out, I think there's just skepticism because you just assume it not to be true because it's proven to be false so many times, which obviously doesn't help matters either.
Which extends to everything about his presidency. You know, the last week when they had the press conference with the Italian prime minister and they were talking about immigration and Trump was bemoaning the state of the immigration policy in this country and he said, "We are the laughingstock of the world." And I said to myself after hearing that, there's one thing that we can agree about. We are the laughingstock of the world, but not because of immigration, but because of this guy, the president of the United States, performing as he is, has made us the laughingstock of the world. By the way, the New York Times is reporting just a few minutes ago that he's going to try to work something out with the council despite his lawyer's objections.
Well, and so what would that – because the last line was that Mueller wanted to talk to him about obstruction.
Right.
Well, that's nuanced also.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Because we have negotiations going on. I'll talk to you, but I won't talk to you about this or that. And that is very troubling to me. It's particularly troubling if Mueller buys it. You know, I mean, I'm worried about that.
Well, don't you have to be very concerned? Check that. Don't the prosecutor or the Trump's lawyers, don't they have to be very concerned about this guy testifying and speaking at all? I mean, he's proven again and again that he won't stay to the script.
Well, the big lie that they keep saying is Trump believes that he can convince Mueller that what he's doing is a rat race.
Well, I'm sure
But if you think about that for a second, it's ridiculous because, you know, we know and we've heard it again and again that Mueller has indicted all these people. Some people have taken pleas. People are going to trial on all of that. And yet we have these reports that the president believes he can convince Mueller that this whole thing is not right. Could anybody really believe that? So let's assume for a second that he really believes that.
Yeah.
Is it possible that he's nuts? I mean, it's a bad word, but you know, if he really believes that, with all these indictments and everything else, he would have to be, you know, in a terrible mental place.
I don't know. There are some people who believe they can talk their way out of anything. And he may think he's the best salesperson in the world.
I mean, to your point over and over again, Alan, is that he also, you know, being this way got him to be president of the United States.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Yeah, you're right. This is somber. Okay. Yeah, I asked.
I could talk about Blondie. Startup,
yeah.
Blondie will.
Yeah, Blondie will help us out
in
a few minutes.
Room?
We'll be back and continue our conversation with our wonderful panel and your letters after this short break. That week, yep. Blondie doing her bumper music this morning and going to be at Mass Mocha tomorrow night. Welcome back to the program. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here. Judy Patrick, Chris Churchill, and Ira Fussfeld. We welcome your letters. And Alan has a few to read to us this morning.
I will. Thank you, Joe. Barbara says, I'm so confused. It has been said that Trump would like the Democrats to win the midterms because then you would have a foil to run against in 2020. But, capital letters, if there is a blue wave in November, won't Trump be impeached and therefore not even be running in 2020? I know you don't have a crystal ball to predict the future, but please help me think this thing through. I often think, be careful what you wish for. Personally, I'm not sure I want Pence as the president. Well, we've been talking about this a lot, guys. I mean, there is all of that. I doubt very much, my own personal feeling is, I doubt very much Pence wants the Democrats to win the House.
Or Trump, you mean? Yeah, I kind of doubt that, too. Although, I suppose that theory is fueled by this weird fight with the Koch brothers that's going on right now. I mean, the Koch brothers started it, though. It wasn't Trump. But even the fact that Trump is continuing to push it doesn't really help the Republicans' chances this fall.
Yeah, and keep in mind, an impeachment is just an indictment. Then it would go to trial to the Senate.
Right,
the Senate,
which would still be Republican, so it wouldn't really do.
Well,
yeah,
we assume it would still be Republican. There is the possibility that on election night, we'll be looking at that screen, and some guy from CNN will be saying, look at this. This guy who was supposed to be safe didn't win. So we don't really know what the amount of anger out there is.
You could make a good argument, though, that impeaching him would be the best thing that ever happened to him, because it would do exactly what the letter writer said, which is, you know, give him a great foil. You know, look at, they're trying to, they're ignoring your vote and they're trying to take me out of office, especially if he's acquitted by the Senate. I mean, that would be well, golden for him.
Well, despite my great respect for you, Chris, I couldn't.
Here it comes. Here it comes.
I couldn't disagree more. You know, this guy does not want an investigative committee.
I'm not saying that he wants it, but I'm just saying that you could argue that if he's impeached, that would really fuel up his base. I mean, really, really, like bring the fire and passion.
Well, there's an awful lot of fire and passion there, and I think the Democrats, to your point, recognize that. And also recognize Barbara's point that they don't want Pence. So the name of the game. But if you had a House of Representatives with the major investigatory committees run by Democrats for a change, this would be the worst thing that Trump could ever want.
But wouldn't it then, if Just if it were, let's just say all of what you were just saying happens and Vice President Pence becomes President Pence, it's still going to be a lot different. You're not going to have the tweeting. You're not going to have – you're going to have some order. I'm not going to – I'm not saying that ideologically we will agree with a guy, but there's still going to be probably – the order of the presidency that has been lacking since he took since President Trump took office will in some way be restored.
Despite my great respect for you, and you know that. I
Chris, it's great to be a part of your club.
Yeah. Welcome aboard.
I couldn't disagree more. Look, if Pence takes over, you're going to have a guy who is opposed to abortion.
Well, that's what I said. But ideologically, I agree with you. It's going to be horrible. But the fact of the norms of the presidency will in some way return.
You're returning to a Republican who's not that different than George W. Bush, say.
Correct.
Yeah. I think you may not agree with them ideologically, but there won't be these crazy tweets every morning. There won't be these weird...
The circus.
Yeah, the circus.
I think there will be many people who disagree with you.
I refer you to Frank Bruni's column in the New York Times of about 10 days ago where he basically said, despite what you folks are just saying, that Pence would be worse than Trump.
But again, ideologically...
The whole package.
That kind of frustrates me because the whole argument is supposed to be that Trump is this unique danger, unique being the key word. And if people are saying he's a unique danger, but Pence is even more unique or even worse, I mean, that you're undercutting that argument. He's either a unique danger or he's not.
I'm sorry. I'm having a little trouble. Maybe it's, you know.
I'm probably not making any sense.
Coldness in the
no. If people say Trump is a unique danger, then you can't say that Pence is even worse.
Well, he could be. In that Joe's point is well taken. He could regularize, basically, normalize the presidency, and have all of the things that many people in the middle and the left attest so much a part of what he's going to get done as the president.
Yeah, but that's all ideology, right? I mean, that's a different thing than what people are talking. When they say Trump is a unique danger, I mean, I think they're talking about everything, what Joe was referring to as the circus, right? All the scary meetings with Putin and all this stuff.
Well, you know, that's a very good point.
And there's some people who argue the circus is never going to leave town. The circus is here to stay, that there might be a moderation in the craziness, but that that Trump has established a new level of craziness.
Dystopian view of what's going to happen.
Right. So Trump, suddenly in the Handmaid's Tale. Okay, Alan, let's...
Oh, continue? Thank
continue.
You.
Thank you. I apologize for interrupting.
Letter. No, not at all. That was a good letter by Barbara. Okay. And Rich says, the current venomous attack on the press originated with Trump. It is not equal on both sides of the political spectrum, as implied by Chris.
I don't know. I'm not sure that I agree with that. If you talk to like conservative columnists like Bret Stephens at the New York Times or Barry Weiss, they'll tell you that the vitriol they get from the left is intense.
Well, we certainly feel it here at WAMC. Yeah. No matter what we do, we're hearing from certain players that we're as much to blame as anybody else, and that we're not doing enough. And part of the passion that is going on both sides of the aisle here is, you're quite right, is leading up to some very tough attacks.
Well, and I think it's certainly worth noting that while these conversations were going on in the media over the last 24 or 48 hours regarding how the president's rally went down and with people at that rally going after Jim Acosta, that is that different than the fact that Mitch McConnell can't go to a restaurant without having food thrown at him? I mean, is that...
Are they really throwing food at him?
Well, they're going after him. They're going, you know, they're chanting. They're and I don't know. I don't know if that seems to be... I understand that there's a difference, although that's still a lack of civility of an office of that. Have we reached a point where nobody can walk down the street without having, you know, these jeers for whatever they've done? And in McConnell's case,
some people have made the analogy too to college campuses and whenever a conservative speaker speaks there's violence and broken windows.
But I think Joe's point and yours is a good one, because we see, for example, when Elizabeth Warren came to town, I wrote my Eagle column on this last week, and a guy who calls here all the time. We call him Paul from Hillsdale. I know his last name. And Paul from Hillsdale gets mad at me because I won't.
Here's his address.
I won't let him talk. I won't let him talk long enough, and then the rest of this kind of stuff. Well, there was this guy who was running against Elizabeth Warren, who has no chance whatsoever. But he goes out and he tries to aggravate everybody. He stands across from the movie theater where from the Mehewi Theater, and he has a bullhorn and he's saying the most terrible things that are guaranteed to make everybody crazy. And Paul from Hillsdale walks up to him and shoves his bullhorn in his face. Now, there is exactly the kind of thing that we're talking about that might not have happened pre this this round of real genuine anger on everybody's part.
Right. I mean, I think it's that. I think it's Sarah Huckabee Sanders being asked to leave a restaurant. I think it's in which I think started then this following of these figures to various establishments throughout the city. It's I don't know.
Yeah, could be. You know, we have a president of the United States who really can't show his face in New York City.
No.
Because, you know, because there would be so much reaction to it, even though he owns buildings. I mean,
you go to Wilkes-Barre.
Yeah, and I stood on Central Park West one day and watched people walking by, you know, Trump Tower and putting a certain finger up in the air as almost a habitual salute that goes on. So there is that kind of anger. Okay, and I think warranted. Trump at Congress, says Mary.
By the way.
I was wondering if a class action lawsuit could be initiated against Trump for not doing anything to protect the United States from cyber attacks and hacking, which we know is occurring right now. What will it take for our elected officials to do something about this serious problem? Mary from Hyde Park. Anyone?
Well, you can't file a lawsuit against the president if he's not protecting the country as you think he should be, just as you couldn't if it was a, you know, an old-fashioned war. This is just a different kind of warfare. The thing to do is you have to go to the voting booth, get them out, get people in whose policies are different.
It does all come down to that, Aaron. Teresa says, on both sides, right out of the gate, Chris Churchill pulls the false equivalency, quote, on both sides nonsense. The truth is not, see, this exemplifies what we're talking about. The truth is not in the middle. Of course, there are reprehensible people of all beliefs, but let's not muddy the waters about what the real danger is right now. It is Trump supporters being whipped into a frenzy by the, in capital letters, President of the United States, and it is putting our democracy in serious jeopardy. Chris, do you want to?
No, I mean, you know, just repeat what I said. There's a lot of anger on both sides. You know, there's a lot of incivility on both sides. You know, if you're on one side or the other, you demonize the other side, and that's the way our politics are right now. But, you know, ultimately, I think politics is about the art of persuasion, and I think instead of saying to people, you know, you're awful, you're racist, you're whatever, you need to persuade them to come over to your side. And the problem is that the anger really doesn't persuade anybody. Anger just hardens everybody's feelings.
Susan says, panel, not that it's any surprise, but Cuomo completely gives himself away when saying that he is suing Spectrum. The PSC is supposed to be an independent commission, but everyone knows they don't act without the blessing of the second floor.
Well, he kept using the word I am suing your station. Yeah, that was what was bizarre about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting.
How many got there?
What'd you say?
One more?
One more, is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay. Comment. Withdraw press coverage from Trump's newsless political rallies. Note in one or two paragraphs on page 8 of the next day's edition of the paper that he had a rally without exposure until safety and respect is given to the press and the First Amendment. America would be a less better place if there was merely a mention of Trump's horrible, self-serving political rallies. Do not enable him with what he wants. And that's from Tom in Catskill.
Well, generally, that's what's happening. The other night in the Tampa rally, I flipped around to see. I was curious. Fox was playing the rally live in its entirety. The other two cable news channels were not. And then they had snippets of what he said that they thought were interesting that they were going to talk
about. You can't not cover the President of the United States.
You have to be there, but you don't have to turn over your entire network.
Which is what they did during the election.
Which is what they did during the re-election. And that was a big – and during the election.
But then they're also – and it's what they're looking for, too. They're not letting it go but then they're also mining it for parts, and the parts that they're taking is, oh, you have to show your ID to buy groceries. You know, that's what they're...
See, I don't object to that too much. If that's a comment that he made was either provocative or stupid.
Well, please don't. I don't object to it either. Yeah. I think it's great, yeah. but I think that's also what they're looking for.
But it is the level of frustration that people are saying, you shouldn't put Trump on the television, you shouldn't do it on... I'm sorry.
But I can tell you that when I ran a daily newspaper, when we wouldn't put those stories out front, or if we wouldn't put them in the paper at all, we would get many calls saying, you are against the president, that needs to be on the front page.
30,000 people showed up. Why didn't you cover it?
Exactly.
That? Yeah. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll talk about Jeff Sessions and the president and much more. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. I was going to go to the story about the president and Jeff Sessions, but we just delivered a ream of letters. So let's get to those to the top of the hour, and then we'll come back and talk about other issues.
I'll go quick. Matt, 2020. The only way Trump leaves office is if he's beaten at the ballot box in 2020, even if the Dems take the House this fall. There's no way the Senate will vote to convict Trump in an impeachment proceeding. Waiting for bombshells from Mueller is a fool's errand. Peter says impeachment. My worry about Trump's impeachment is that he would incite his supporters to take to the streets with torches and pitchforks. That's Peter in New Paltz. And Sharon says, problem solved. Good morning, Roundtable. Obviously, the voting system throughout the country are vulnerable to hacking and tampering, and there's so much talk and energy and money being put into trying to protect it. Why not simply go back to paper ballots, get our voting systems off the computers and off the web so they can be accessed through any outside source? Problem solved. It's called common sense. Sharon, here's the problem with your letter, and that is one of the reasons we have gone away from paper ballots is that there were some crooked guys who were counting the ballots who used to keep a little piece of lead under their fingernail to change the ballots. So, you know, everything.
We had the hanging chads, too.
Everything is corruptible.
Well, the story that was on NPR yesterday was in regards to backup paper ballots. In other words, you have the electronic ballot, and then you have the paper ballot, and then you compare the two.
Right, which is the way we do it here, right? I mean, that's the way it is in my polling place. You stick it in the computer and it counts it, but you also have the paper.
Yeah, we have that in Massachusetts, too. Good state.
good boy.
Wait a minute, New York's a good state, too.
I didn't say it wasn't. I just said Massachusetts was. Martin says obstruction. Trump is not insane. He's a devious narcissist. He knows damn well, and he's obstructing justice with his tweets about firing Mueller, his request to Comey to drop the Flynn investigation, et cetera, et cetera. The fact that we even question it shows how effective he's been at turning the narrative. He says something plainly objectionable, then twists its meaning, denies saying it, paints himself as a victim for being attacked. It is depressing about how many people fall for this transparent manipulation, and that's from our friend Marty, who quite frequently checks in with us. Yeah.
Well, I think it's not only depressing, but it's just unfathomable. When you have the amount of lying that this man has done that can be demonstrably proven to be lies, and yet he has people who either are willing to ignore those lies or whatever reason. Any other person in the private sector, can you imagine if he was in the a CEO of a private sector, a publicly traded company, and ran that the way he's running this country, and the amount of lying he was doing? The board of directors would have voted him out, three lies into it, not 4,000.
Unless he was making money.
But, you know, Trump supporters will say that politicians have been lying for years.
You know what? There's the lying that's George Bush saying, read my lips, no new taxes, about policy. And then there's a lying that the kind that he does about
everything.
Well, right. What you just heard doesn't exist. Yeah.
What you read or hear.
Right. Yeah, just believe me.
Well, Sarah Sanders getting up and talking about this bin Laden theory that had been debunked years ago and saying it as if it's fact.
Remind us of what that was again.
I can't nail down the details, but it's something to do about the press.
The satellite phone, yeah.
Yes, and the press supposedly covered up that story, and it put the U.S. security at risk. That's a QAnon conspiracy.
I think the allegation was that the press reported that he used a satellite phone, and thereafter he stopped using it.
I see.
So that they couldn't listen into his conversations anymore. But I think that's, like you said, has been debunked.
Okay, so Russell says, what Donald Trump does not recognize. When Donald Trump speaks, he's not speaking to anyone else but himself. He doesn't recognize that anyone else matters, that he's just another human being, no better or worse than anybody else. Let me read that one again. Just another human being, no better or worse than anyone else. He believes he's a special person above everyone else and is absolutely and totally entitled to say whatever he chooses to without having to answer for such, and with no consequences either. And then Rose says, bullying or vindictiveness? Bullying is a popular and loaded buzzword nowadays. I feel vindictiveness, in other words, getting even, is a more accurate word to characterize the governor's and POTUS's lack of accommodation towards certain members of the press, and that's from Rose.
Yeah, vindictiveness works.
Yeah, they both have thin skins.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Russ says, he doth protest. Mr. Trump has been progressively more shrill in his denunciation of the Mueller probe, to the point where he is now condemns the investigation as an entirely partisan conspiracy. This would be consistent with his behavior in scores of previous lawsuits. It seems to me he's winding up to a showdown now that his CPA has been subpoenaed. When you have nothing to hide, deny reality. And we've heard from Kathy. If you want to avoid President Pence, two words. Spiro Agnew. Now, Spiro Agnew, for those of you who don't remember, was once vice president of the United States and who was Nixon's vice president and who was brought up on charges because he misbehaved when he was the head, I think, of Baltimore County, where he had been the chief executive. He was the county executive. It was not what he did when he was in the presidency. Now, what's interesting about that one is he never pled guilty. He just left and he said, nolo contendere. Right. I'm not going to argue with you about this.
The other question, it's been brought up in the show before, and at the risk of, I don't want to start just wild speculation, but if you go on the path of removing the president, if you go that far, which I don't know it's fair to go to, but if you go that far, did Vice President Trump know what was going on?
As
That Pence knew what was going on, and would he also be removed?
Well, that's a good question. Has been asked many times.
Right, exactly.
There are things you want to do and you don't want to do. So, for example, we're told that Pence will not get into a room with a female alone.
He tells us that.
Yeah. So that's, he's anticipating that. Maybe he's anticipating, hey, I don't want to hear that. Don't tell me that. I don't want to hear that, because that would spoil my chances. Who knows? Jeannie says, stop politicking in investigations. I don't care who becomes president. If Trump is impeached and removed from office, I want justice, not politics. I don't want Mueller meeting with Trump's legal team to determine what questions will be asked in advance. I want the facts to lead the investigation, not politics. I want justice, says Jeannie. Okay, and then Betsy says, both sides, come on. You say you
You're reading that with too much emphasis.
It says, A-W-W-W, come see
Stella
Adler. Come on. You say you get vitriol from the left, like what? Almost sounds like Trump saying there are good people on both sides about Reed Charlottesville. Getting critical response from viewers is what you are supposed to get. Am I missing something? At. The same time you criticize CNN, but then talk nonstop about Trump. What are you doing? With much love. And that's from Betsy.
When Trump said the both sides thing,
that's what love
is. Charlottesville,
like.
He was talking about Nazis. I mean, that's not what we're talking. I'm just saying that there's a lot of anger on both sides of the political aisle.
Okay. And Max says, on civility, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
How about we save worrying about the current regime being yelled at restaurants for another day? Shouldn't we care more about our neighbors being grabbed by the ICE stormtroopers? And that's from Max. I thought he was going to go to another place. Some of our neighbors being grabbed by the you-know-what, according to Trump. You don't remember that?
I thought that's where
we
were
all
going
forgotten
to.
About that?
Yeah, I thought that was. Yeah. No, we remember all too clearly, unfortunately.
That's all I got. That's all I got for you now.
Excellent. So. We'll take a break. We'll be right back after this. Cold as ice cream, still as sweet. I like that.
Is that what she just said?
Yes, that's what she was saying.
Yeah,
cold as ice cream, still as sweet. Mm. Blondie will be, we were hearing Blondie this morning. Blondie's going to be at Mass Mocha tomorrow night at Mass Mocha, and you can find out more. She's coming in by train. Train's arriving. She's going to be there tomorrow night, and you can find out more by going to massmocha.org, and you can see the full playlist on our website. And she'll be joining us right after the panel. She'll be on. We'll be talking to Blondie about what's life has been like for her.
Just a couple,
and then I really want to get to the sessions.
Sure, I'll go fast. John says tolerating evil isn't civility; it's complicity. If we learn nothing else from history. Learn that. Okay, and then from Austin, when the left starts the building baby jails for conservatives, you can start equivocating people being rude to Mitch McConnell and other enablers and collaborators with the sort of behavior that the Trump GOP engages in. And then what? Okay, and then Whitney says, willing to watch the circus to see the finale. Moving past the impeachment dream, we are halfway through the Trump's term. I didn't mean to say the Trump's term. Yes, I did. I am approaching the point where I'm willing to ride this out for the pleasure of seeing him, in capital letters, defeated in 2020 by 80% of the vote. The blow to his ego will be worth the price of admission. Do you really think that even if that happened, and it won't, but even if that happened, do you really think that he will take that as a comeuppance? No, he'll figure something out.
He has laid the groundwork for his departure. He is going to declare victory no matter how he leaves, whether he's impeached, whether he's indicted, or loses an election, and it's all going to be because of the fake news, and the system is rigged, and on and on and on and on. He will not emerge scathed, as they might say.
I am not bringing my children to the Trump carousel in Central Park.
Yeah. And I might say that I believed what that writer believed during the campaign, that he's going to get beaten by Hillary by so many percentage points that he's going to leave with his tail between his legs. And guess what? He won. So I wouldn't – that 80-20 seems pretty far-fetched to me right now.
Yeah, it is.
According to the polls. What would you say?
According to all the polls, 80-20.
Not what I thought you said. Okay.
The same polls that rated Lincoln so high?
And Hillary so high?
Well, but Lincoln was, he's more popular in the polls than Lincoln was in the polls when Lincoln was president. Of course, there being no polls nor no telephones.
And there was a little civil war going on.
Yes. All right. President Trump called on Attorney General Jeff Sessions on Wednesday to end the special counsel's inquiry into Russia's interference in the 2016 election, issuing an unambiguous, depends on who you ask, directive on Twitter to shut down an investigation that even now is scrutinizing his tweets for evidence on obstruction. The White House and Mr. Trump's lawyers moved quickly to minimize the president's statement, dismissing it merely as a case of venting by a president who has grown increasingly angry with an investigation that he considers illegitimate and not a direct order to a cabinet secretary to interfere with a continuing federal law enforcement matter. But in saying that Mr. Sessions, the U.S.'s top law enforcement official, should take specific action to terminate the investigation, the tweet crossed a line that Mr. Trump has never explicitly crossed until now. Mm. It immediately raised more questions about whether Mr. Trump was attempting to obstruct justice, already in an issue being examined extensively by Robert Mueller, the special counsel leading that investigation. The Sarah Huckabee Sanders yesterday said that this was his opinion. It was not a directive. It was nothing but his opinion. The tweet reads, "This is a terrible situation, and Attorney General Jeff Sessions should stop this rigged witch hunt right now before it continues to strain our country any further. Bob Mueller is totally conflicted, and his 17 angry Democrats that are doing his dirty work are a disgrace to the USA."
Well, look, this is terrible. Sean, what was the name of the last guy before?
Sean Spicer.
Sean Spicer. He was quoted as saying, when the president says something, he means it. You know, clearly, this was an instruction to Sessions to cut it out, to unrecuse himself. I don't know that anybody says you can't unrecuse yourself if you can recuse yourself. So to unrecuse himself and then, you know, to fire Rosenstein and to do what I've been saying is going to happen all along, to fire Mueller. It's going to happen, and he has no choice about the matter. I'm not espousing that he should do it or that he'd be right to do it. I'm just telling you, rats in the corner.
So, Joe, if your superior at WAMC, Alan Shartok, said to you, you know, the panel is pretty good. I think we ought to make it 2 hours. But that's just my opinion. What would you do? I mean, this guy is essentially giving him an order.
Well, actually, to be fair, Joe would say no.
He would say no, but I don't. You know, we can joke about that. But the point is, if you said that, it's no joke. But if you said that, it would be your opinion, but it would also be
a
directive.
Weight.
Yes.
Well, I think so. But these two guys have been through this. I mean, how long have they been doing this dance?
Sessions
and Trump.
Well, and so bringing us back to why did Sessions recuse himself in the first place?
Which made Trump so mad.
Yeah, because he had some vulnerability. That's why, and that was clear that he had talked to the Russians himself, and that he wanted to get the hell out of the way before this thing really got bad. Now it'll be interesting to see if this all comes out in the wash, whether he still bears some responsibility for what he did do.
Whether it's obstruction of justice or just his opinion, either way, it's just another demonstration of just kind of complete lack of impulse control. I mean, this tweet is going to cause him trouble, and any person with any sort of foresight would think to themselves, you know what, I probably shouldn't send that.
But what were his choices?
I mean, just don't say anything. Just quiet. You know, a morning without a tweet would not be the worst thing in the world.
Right? Just shush. Just shush.
Yeah, well, you don't have to say anything.
Or as Mrs. Wick said, keep shut.
Right, exactly.
However, who knew? I wonder if her family is up here and knows that she's famous now for saying keep shut. I have to say that Trump is Trump has no choices anymore. The circle is growing tighter.
Yeah,
don't you understand that, Chris?
He
had to do something.
This doesn't help him anyway.
Think firing Mueller is going to help him in the long run? No, but he's going to do it.
But this particular tweet, worded as it is going to do him harm. They can use that against him, and that's one of the reasons why Sarah Sanders and TV lawyer Rudy Giuliani said, "Oh no, it was his opinion."
That's why they scrambled to kind
TV
of like
lawyer.
Back, yeah, to clarify. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, anyway, that's Anderson Cooper. Deserves credit for
okay,
that.
That's okay, that's like that. It's something that the president said, and I don't know how you. I understand why you would want to. I understand how you can attempt to walk it back, but I don't know how any thinking person could look at that at anything but, to your point, Ira, a directive mm-hmm. to. The Attorney General.
Without question.
Remember in the early days, there was some talk of having him go off Twitter to not tweet anymore?
Right. That was the Kelly rule, right? When Kelly came on, they thought that would all go away.
But this notion that some of his tweets are opinions and nothing more than his expressions of dissatisfaction is crazy, because he's fired people with tweets, correct?
Well, in the briefing,
yeah,
correct.
Yeah, he fired the Secretary of State.
In the briefing room yesterday, They said, Sarah Sanders said, look, we've been through this a million times. This was the president's opinion. And a reporter said, no, we've been through this a million times with you where you have said also that these tweets are official statements from the White House. You can't have it both ways.
And if you, when you talk to Trump supporters, one of the things that they will express some unhappiness with is
the Twitter.
Tweeting.
Yes. Yeah.
Somebody, the White House should design a program that they can put on the president's phone that looks like just like Twitter, so he can think he's tweeting, but then it just goes, goes nowhere.
Chris, you can't convince this guy that he's the president of the United States for no reason at all. He thinks that the tweets have helped him no matter what has happened, and he's not going to stop because he believes that's the basis of his success.
But this is the point that we were making during the break, because we were watching CNN had a crawl up there that said that the White House is planning several more rallies to distract the president. But this is the same thing. I mean, this is what you're talking about, Chris. I mean, it is. It's like giving a toddler something with bright shiny object to try to keep them away from hurting themselves.
Well, see, I don't believe that if CNN is really saying that's what's happening, I believe it's misplaced. This is a guy who does what he wants to do.
The White House is saying,
trying to restrain him as much as they possibly can.
Yeah, and they want to divert him with a bright, shiny object or something like that. I've always believed this president does what he wants to do.
Well, the other thing about him is he gets criticized for tweeting as much as he does, regardless of the subject. And he'll say, well, you know, it only takes a couple of minutes to tweet. I can do that. So, but then you look at what he's tweeting about. For example, this morning he tweeted about the ratings of Fox and Friends being so much better, he says, than the other two cable news networks. Oh, man, this is the president of the United States. He's got 500 million things that are much more important than that, and this is what he chooses to tweet in. This is what he's thinking about in his residence this morning. Where is his mind? Why is he not thinking about, you know, more important things than the ratings of the cable news shows?
Well,
so it's quite a window in. I mean, there is a benefit. There is a benefit of his tweets. It's a window into his mind. It's not always, and it needs some cleaning. What was the name of the TV window cleaner? I can't remember.
He
used to have a character, a female character, who was a window. Well, anyway, they need her.
The window viper.
All right. Let's move on to other topics. We have a few minutes left. We'll try to get to as much as we can here. In that period of time, we go to the Manafort trial goes on. Day two of the Manafort trial. We already mentioned the fact that the president has been actively tweeting about the trial as it's going on, which does seem to be problematic as well. But President Trump's former campaign chairman spent more than $1 million on business suits over 5 years using foreign bank accounts to pay for cars, clothes, and real. That's how you afford that stuff.
Well, yeah. See, but Joe, the whole point here is that the government is trying to, Mueller people are trying to prove that where did the money come from for all this? And now you have this judge. What's his face again?
Ellis. Not Elliot.
Yeah, I said Elliot.
Ellis.
Yeah. Almost Elliot, but not. Who said, who's basically siding with him, said, look, he's got all this money, and what does that mean? Well, what the government's trying to prove here, what Mueller is trying to prove, the prosecution, is that where did he get all that money, and did he pay taxes on it? I think that I'm a little afraid that the judge may be in their pocket.
Pocket. And I've covered trials, and if the president was saying anything about the trial I was covering, there would definitely be a mistrial. I'm not even sure why this not even discussed much.
It would seem to be a major concern, because again, that's also being labeled by the president as a witch hunt.
And the prosecution is trying to get into evidence the amount of money he would spend on clothes, the extravagance. It's not so much they had a lot of nice suits, because almost everybody can afford a few nice suits and a house with a swimming pool.
Not at $100,000.
But it's the extravagance of it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I love what the judge said.
He said
it was crazy. Yeah.
The judge said, I don't know about these companies that you're naming the most expensive suits in the world.
The only one I know is Men's Warehouse.
Men's Warehouse. Me too, by the way.
There's also a proposal to the TSA is mulling a plan to eliminate security checkpoints at 150 smaller airports Security checkpoints would be eliminated at more than 150 small U.S. airports under a plan being considered by Transportation Secretary, Transportation Security Administration. Passengers would instead be screened when they arrived at larger airports after their initial flight. The idea was first floated by the TSA 2 years ago and was seen then by critics as a transparent effort to get Congress to spend additional money on the agency. This is completely nuts, said Mary Schiavo, former Inspector General of the U.S. Department of Transportation and an aviation expert. Perhaps they want an outcry from the public to say, oh, no, 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 Congress, give them an additional $115 million that they say this would save. The proposal raises questions about whether would-be terrorists could penetrate the nation's air system at the airports lacking screening or command smaller shuttle aircraft and use them to damage buildings or other infrastructure. The obvious thing here is that if you screen them when they get off the plane, that's a little too late, isn't it?
This is so dumb. It's unimaginable. And they're thinking, well, the terrorists will only be concerned about big planes, not little planes. Oh, no. They'll get a guy on there, he'll scream something as the plane goes down. And, you know, if you kill 50 people or 100 people, that's a lot of people.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say I was just in Puerto Rico a couple of weeks ago, and we landed in San Juan, and then we had to take a puddle jumper to Vieques. And then, of course, flying to San Juan, you're going through security in New York. Going back on the puddle jumper to San Juan, there was no security.
Right.
Now, it was only an 8-seater airplane, but so it couldn't take down the World Trade Center. It could do damage or kill the occupants if so desired. But we flew into San Juan, and then we went through security.
But there would have been hell to pay. The only one I think, and I don't want to put words in her mouth because she's been so anti-TSA for so long, is Rosemary, who is really not like the fact that they put her through a certain amount of hell when she gets on the plane, and my wife Roselle, who also is very
it's a pain in the neck, but I think most people are willing to put up with it. And if you have the TSA pre-check, which is it's a big time saver, it costs a few bucks, but if you fly often enough, it's worth it.
It could be a pain. I know I wear suspenders, and they have little metal things on them, and they make me take the suspenders off when I go through the thing, and then my
pants fall down. It's
outrageous. And when you walk in there wearing that hoodie, you look like a terrorist.
Yeah.
It's such a transparent effort to try to get more funding.
I know. Obviously. I mean, it's almost like, should we even take it seriously or just ignore it? Well, it's hard to believe they would actually do it.
Remember Mel Brooks going through security and high anxiety, and he the bells go off, and he says, "What's this? Did I win a Buick?"
I love that movie. We're just about out of time. But we'll keep it there. So I was going to try to throw in one more story, but that seems we won't be able to do anything justice. Anything you want to leave us with?
No, I think I upgraded from Soupy Sales to Mel Brooks this week, so I think that's good.
There you go. Chris, any final words?
Nope. Just going on with my day.
All right.
Yeah, let's just hope all our dispositions improve throughout the day because we started out pretty depressed here.
It must be nice and
shiny. Blondie. Blondie.
Oh, Blondie. Look for her.
Remember, cold as ice cream still is sweet.
I'm with you, Judy.
It's cold as ice cream in here, by the way.
It keeps the comedy fresh.
Keeps the comedy fresh. Yeah. I thought, Alan, you turned it up. Didn't you turn the heat up when you came in?
Oh.
Do you still video this? Is this still on?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So people should check in and see what Alan looks like today because he's
very
cold.
Yoda-ish.
Alan looks like Lewis.
Oh, is that right?
your twin?
His twin brother. That's right. My thanks to everybody. We'll be back right after with Blondie. Blondie will be on the show after this.